back with more Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Jeremy Heide.
I'm Neil Einstein.
And I'm Gary. How's everyone doing today?
Today we have a full house, but not the house that we were expecting. We're talking comics today. And Neil is here, and Gary is here, but Tim is not here. So Gary is going to have to be Tim and talk as much as Tim in order to make up for the difference. But a replacement Tim in Gary is more than fully qualified.
Jeez, that's a lot of words to fill. You know, that's like write a 5,000-page essay now. But I'll try.
You are more than eminently qualified to keep up with Tim.
I'll do my best to fill Mr. Calendar's shoes.
I believe you were mentioning something about a new book that was out.
Oh, yes, I was. Claudia Christian and when I'm is releasing a new book, and it's actually, to my best of my knowledge, has nothing to do with the Babylon 5 Scripps team. It's her own publication being put out. It's called Babylon Confidential, and there's a short little synopsis of the book, and it's a little bit racy even. I'll go ahead and read it quickly. When actress Claudia Christian flees a troubled childhood and moves to Hollywood at age 17, she steps through the looking glass into another world. From the set of Dallas to her starring role in Babylon 5, Claudia's affairs with billionaires, supermodels, rock stars, and celebrities are mixed with shootings, stalkings, conspiracy, heartbreak, and betrayal. So it sounds quite interesting from what I've read about it and heard from teasers. It's sort of her tell-all book, and it's an autobiography that really isn't in line with any of the previous books that she has put out, which have been mainly, I guess, fan-orientated, for lack of a better term. This is supposed to be more about her as a person, so talking about, you know, various affairs as well as substance abuse issues she's had over the years and how she's overcome them. So
this is really a kiss and tell?
As best I can tell, yes. It's it's available for pre-sale. It's not actually going to be published, I think, till the fall in November. Mm-hmm. But it's available on Amazon, Ben Bella Books, and a few other sites as well. So you should be able to Google Claudia Christian. The title's Babylon Confidential. She actually does not have a picture of herself in any Earth Force uniform on the cover, so it might be actually more of a personal, you know, telling of her life. So,
and you know what strikes me as really funny about that? The editor of Ben Bella Books is the person who I literally hounded for 4 years to try to get him to put out a Babylon 5 collection similar to the Battlestar Galactica one and the Harry Potter one, all the other smart pop book collections that they do. And his thing was, oh, Babylon 5, nobody cared about that show. And yet he's printing this book from Claudia with
well,
the title.
You know, she's
Babylon.
A very persuasive person, you know, and she has been trying to write several books for a few years now. So,
but it's got Babylon in the title. And I would have thought that write-off would have made Glenn so, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. I honestly think he hates the show, but I have no proof of this.
Well, you know, it was hard to find when it was playing back in the day. Maybe you just missed it.
It was, but to say that nobody liked it or nobody watched it, that's
a bit of a slap in the face.
That's generalization taken a little too far.
I know it's hard to believe, Summer, but there are a huge group of people that really have not seen Babylon 5 or think it's Deep Space Nine. So, you know,
he knows what Babylon 5 is. He just thinks that, well, nobody ever watched it. I'm like, how did it get 5 seasons if nobody watched it? Come on.
It was just
on the Ben Bella webpage there. They say that Claudia Christian, author of Babylon Confidential, will attend Comic Palooza at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas on May 18 through 20.
Oh, there you go. Now, if we could only get her to come out here to Phoenix Comic Con, that'd be cool.
That would be nice. And Summer, I do like the new music. As long as you don't include the space zoo, I'll be fine.
I don't think I have a way to include that, but I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the only other related news that I've got is that apparently JMS is going to, and I'm quoting here from the Twitter, JMS is going to bite the photon and buy QMX $5,000 USS Enterprise replica.
It is pretty. I've seen it in person. It is very
nice. Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
How big is this thing for $5,000?
I mean, I'm just going off memory, but it's probably on the site, but it's probably close to around 2 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, on his Fans of JMS Facebook page, he says, quote, "I'm such a geek, I'm actually considering buying one of these despite the massive price tag once the back orders are filled." And he gives a link to where you can get it.
Yeah, they've been selling it for a while, but yeah, it's a good, probably around 2 feet, give or take, and it's lit up amazingly. You know, they sneak all the fiber optic lines through it now, so you can light models in ways that
mounting
a bulb somewhere just, you know, it's night and day different anymore.
It says it's 34.5 inches long, 7 inches high.
Wow.
14 inches high when mounted on the base. Price tag is $4,995.
So that's closer to 3 feet.
Yeah, almost three feet.
Wow. That's impressive. And yet, nobody can tell me what happened to that really cool copper-colored model of the Babylon 5 station that was in Sheridan's office. I just want to know two things. What was it made of, and where did it go?
I thought Straczynski had it. I thought he mentioned somewhere that was one of the items that he did keep.
Was it the copper station that he had, or was it that really, really cool Star Fury model that he had?
No, I thought he had the station.
Huh. I still want to know what it was made of, because it looked really cool. Anyway, we're not going to start talking about what pieces of B5 memorabilia we really, really, really wish we had, because that could take up
two shows.
That's
a long list.
I know, the painting of the station, a pizza box from Fresh Air. Oh, sorry, that's my own personal list. Sorry.
Oh, hey, you got a crew jacket. You're way ahead of most of us. But yes, tonight's discussion will be the first 11-issue series of Babylon 5 that DC Comics put out. We're going to save In Valen's name for next week so that Tim can join us. And I have a feeling the discussions about In Valen's name could get a little bit more expanded.
Well, it's a very tight story of itself, and it really does not link into these first 11 that we're going to discuss. So I agree. It's definitely something that could be discussed separately.
Yes. So indeed. That is what we're going to do. We're going to jump back, take a quick break here, and then come right back with our discussion of the Babylon 5 comics.
You know, sometimes when you're looking for something just a little bit more refreshing, you've got to turn to Slice of Sci-Fi.
SliceofSci-Fi.com.
And we're back to talk about Babylon 5 comics. Now, there's a story about who wrote what, who edited what, who juggled which to get what done. And I'm hoping Gary has all the details for it, because I couldn't find them all.
Well, it's kind of nebulous, because it's one of those things. Some of it's hearsay, some of it's what's on the, you know, the actual credited page of the comic books, and then, you know, some of it is just, you know, stuff JMS has directly said. But from what I know is, number one, he wrote the first book. He also wrote, I believe it was book 7? No, book
did the premise for 6 through 8.
Okay, yeah, he actually put a basic outline for 6 through 8 because he felt that the people that were handling the writing were doing a very bad job. They were dumbing it down, and also he was not able to have true editorial control, because if he wanted to have any input into the writing of the book, according to DC Comics editorial policy at the time, he could have no editorial control. So this was one of the many pitfalls in this, what was supposed to be a 24-issue series, which died an ugly death around number 11.
So do we even have, like, story outlines for what those other, 13 issues would have been?
I don't recall seeing anything.
No, I've never seen them, and it pretty much, JMS, as far as, like, even full-fledged story ideas, pretty much stopped by 8. Issues 9 and 10 were written by David Gerald of Trouble to Tribbles fame, actually, and it was a rejected script that never made it onto the actual show, but JMS didn't have a problem. He thought it worked well in comic book form, so.
Right, and David Gerald had actually said in the Rec Arts Battle of Five moderated group, he had talked about that script at one time in the past, and then you know, when the comics came out, it actually appeared there.
Yeah, over issues 9 and 10. I believe that was the actual title of it? Was it
Laser Mirror Starweb?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, I think that's what the episode title would have been, and it's, I believe they reprinted it in one of the Other Voices books through the Babylon 5 script team. So it's there in both, both in episode form, and then you do have this comic book form, which it's adapted from pretty faithfully from what I recall reading about it. Just as an overall general view of these books, this art, as a comic book fan, I'd have to say the art was very poor. It was that type of art where nothing's really fleshed out. I mean, there aren't clear, crisp lines to the artwork. There's a lot of shadow shading and things of that nature. And it's even the pages. From what JMS quotes on some of his quotes, the pencils and the actual artwork work fine, but when they printed it out onto the actual paper, everything just bled just a little bit extra so that things looked blurry and uncrisp. And it was one of the points that he was dissatisfied with, besides the writing and the editing.
Well, they changed paper type after the fourth issue. So they had just regular newsprint type paper for the first four issues, then starting with 5, it was more glossy paper. And I think
did that actually help?
Yeah, I thought those looked pretty cool.
It was an improvement, I agree. I still don't think it was anywhere near what I'd consider to be good artwork, even for the comic book medium, but it was an improvement, yes. Everything was a little less blurry, but geez, it was still a poor line drawings. For just to throw some names out there, this was by no means like a George Perez style art or a John Byrne, depending on what range we want, or even a Jim Lee. It's not those clear, crisp lines. It's almost more, I'd almost say it barely had harkened back to Gil Kane or, you know, Carmen Infantino or even Gene Colan, where, you know, it's very much a lot of scribbling of lines almost in a sense to make shapes.
The covers for issues 5 and 9 were nicely painted covers, which were pretty cool.
I remember that, like, when I finally actually got to see the comics, the covers to me looked too dark. Does that make sense? Like, there was, like, they didn't know how to draw space, so all those covers that had space shots just looked like the black overwhelmed the art that was there. That was just me.
Oh, no, it was very, I get the feeling that they did not bother to find an artist and pay him well to do these books. They were, you know, I get the feeling that they were always meant to be just, you know, like a let's capitalize and spin off whatever we can, you know, cereal boxes or, you know, anything that they can do to milk the franchise a little bit is what these comics really felt like to me for the most part. They didn't seem to really merge into the storyline as it existed. And I know there's different schools of thought of where some of these episodes, some of these comic books fall in line with episodes. But
well, they actually say on some of them where they do fall in line.
Yeah, but they never very. There's very little in any of them more than I think maybe one page worth of notes would say contributed to the storyline, or you know, it's important that you know these things, unlike the later discussed Valens in Valens' name, which I think did, was more applicable. So a lot of these are, they don't, I don't feel they really give any real insight into much at all. Episode, I think it was 3, had some involvement with Talia, which was sort of interesting, but because you never saw much of her backstory, at least in my mind you didn't, so that was interesting, but it just, most of them fell flat. They were, you know, discarded. Even JMS writes off most of them, so I don't know how much faith we do want to put in them.
Yeah, but the, I mean, the first one he did write, and you see in that story, you know, that's right after the season one finale, it takes place with Sinclair being taken away and being briefed by President Clark about what the situation is there and what happened at the Battle of the Line, and then he's given his memory back there. And that comic was released in the end, you know, beginning of December of '94, which was about halfway through the season two airing in the U.S. So it was solicited before the season actually started.
Well, there was one interesting point of that was the fact that Clark was aware of what happened at the end of the Battle of the Line too. I never quite realized that the Earth side was privy to some of that information.
Right, right. Right. The president knew it, and then so Clark found out once he was became president. He didn't know before that.
Yeah. I guess there's like a president's secret book.
yeah. So
for those of us who like those type of movies, even in the future. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Sinclair, you know, says, "And you knew all this time. You knew," and he says, "No, Commander, not until I assumed this office." So.
And that makes me wonder. That was the one thing when I read that section there. I'm like, wait. I wonder if that influenced his what shall we call it his goal to establish Night Watch and to get rid of people who are under alien influence and all that.
So he obviously would have thought that Sinclair had too much Minbari influence there.
Yeah.
So why not send him to Minbar?
Of course, at this time, we didn't know, you know, Clark's real story, and we didn't. I think as it was airing on TV, we didn't know that. So we're pretty much in the dark as to what's going on with Clark. Well, it's when this came out and as it was being written there. So it was I thought this. You know, it was a nice introduction to the whole thing with some background there. And then, interesting, there's a text page there which, you know, gives some background, and it calls, and there's a line there, you know, the mysterious shadow men. So it uses that, it doesn't, you know, the shadows, it calls them the shadow men at that time.
Now, that was in one of his, wasn't that in one of his early notes on the...
Right.
On them,
it was.
I wonder if they had privy. Was that in the? Was that in that folder when he was first trying to sell the show with the original artwork?
I think it was right in one of the treatments, and I had always thought that Shadow Men referred to the actual human collaborators with the shadows, but now I'm wondering if that's not my interpretation of that is not correct.
Yeah, I think it was originally going to be the race that we know as the Shadows. I think, but But they have, I mean, in each of the comics, or at least a number of them, they have, you know, behind the scenes pages. So in this first one, they've got some stuff on the Star Fury by Mojo and Ron Thornton, and they show the model of the Star Fury, how you make a model in CGI, which is, you know, a nice little extra there.
Yeah, I like those bits in the back actually the most, I think.
So I mean, the first issue was, you know, it was nice background. Issues 2, 3, and 4, I didn't think were that story there was very good, as, you know, Gary obviously didn't either. And in the back of issue 2, there's a thing on makeup. It says makeup for an alien world, and it mentions about about an Emmy. So, and it shows there's a nice picture of John Vickery, with just after his getting makeup in issue 2. So that's nice. In issue 3, there's a Narn single seat fighter Starcraft design, Narn fighter cockpit talks about, and then it has a Earth Force grenade launcher and lurker gun drawings of those. And issue 4 is about costumes, so it shows some original costuming designs for Delenn in the first season and second season, and some and the costume designer has a few paragraphs that she talks about. So there's some nice, you know, extra information in the back of those comics, even though this first set of comics, 2, 3, and 4, don't have the best story in the world. So, but the issues 5 through 8 is the story Shadows in Past and Present, which was I thought it was a good story, and that has the flashback to Garibaldi and Sinclair being on Mars, which was referred to in an early in one of the first episodes of the series. We heard he was going to tell the person, I think from ISN, that there was this story, and so now those issues, which were based on a premise by JMS, we get that in detail, what was going on, and we see them encounter some shadows, them getting stranded on Mars due to an encounter with some shadow ships.
And now, is that story, that whole entire story, an actual rerun of what Garibaldi went through on Mars with even the same? It wasn't the same aliens, was it? I think I missed something in there because I wasn't quite sure where that story. I think I missed something in issue 7 and 8.
So, I mean, it has it's Sinclair and Garibaldi walking through, you know, Mars and trying to survive after the crash. But there are some, I guess there are some, you know, telling the story, and there's some strange aliens there.
It does bear a similarity to the abandoned Garibaldi story from Lost Tales, I guess, at least has a few tidbits that are reminiscent.
Okay, well, wait, this was Keffer and Garibaldi, not Sinclair and Garibaldi, right?
But during that, he's telling the story of...
Okay, maybe that's where I got confused with, like...
Yeah, switching back between... Right. They're paralleled, because they're switching back between him telling the story and them in real time. But they're paralleling at the same time as they're moving along. It's happening with the, you know, both stories.
Right.
Okay, maybe there was some continuity loss in there for me, because of how it was jumping back and forth.
But then, so then in the last episode there, I guess it's on page about page 13, they're looking in on this strange things going on there, and there's these people on conveyor belts, and then there's this one thing that Garibaldi's angling in for a closer look, and they're conducting some kind of medical experiment, and then there's a blonde woman there who's being experimented on, so who we infer was Talia getting her Bureau 13 implant in personality being done to her probably at that time.
Interesting.
And then we see, and we actually see in on the last page of that one, you see they actually show that it was Talia, because there's a little name badge on her there, and Garibaldi has a souvenir of the Psi-Corp badge, which I think he brought in from two messages from Earth. So these comics came out before Messages from Earth, and so it was a little preview of some of the information that we then saw in Messages from Earth. So it was a nice treat for those people who were buying the comic to get the story and then see Garibaldi talk about it again on Messages from Earth.
Okay, so the first four issues actually deal with the secret of Minbari and human souls merging, plus how Sinclair got to Minbar as ambassador, plus that whole other story where who was a rogue telepath, spy?
Cipher.
Yeah. Who was that supposed to be part of the Bureau 13? Or was he a rogue from Bureau 13, like, who was with Bureau 13 and then went out on his own?
Cipher is just whoever they want Cipher to be at the time, is how I gathered it. Cipher continues on.
Well, I got the... No, I thought Cipher was the one who died at the end, because that was the real Cipher.
But they
were going to activate a new one, right?
Right.
Okay.
But
I guess that was my question. Was that part of a Bureau 13 sleeper program, or because if that was supposed to give us a little teaser, give us more about the, okay, I'm here, this is going to kind of make up for never mentioning Bureau 13 ever again in the TV series. To give us a little story in the comic that links to Bureau 13 would have been fun, but you don't know who this Cipher is or what this program is part of, so that would have been fun.
Yeah, I mean, on the Lurker Guide page, they just think that perhaps he was Bureau 13, but there's no conclusions there at all about that.
No hard evidence.
Right. So, interestingly enough, on the Lurker Guide page 4, number 5, it talks about what Gary... There's a couple things that JMS had said about it, and he said, with issue 5, it came out very well, nicely captures both the look, feel, and dialogue of the show. There were some bumps along the way in issues 2 through 4, and I didn't say much, but this one I can highly recommend. And then there's another one about about the new paper and price. I did the first issue, and while the pencils were quite good and the ink's okay, when they put the coloring in, the paper just absorbed the hell out of it, and it looked like crap from my point of view. And I'm not speaking out of school. I said much the same to DC. Parts were nice, but other parts, yikes. I felt strongly that we needed a better quality of paper, otherwise a lot of good work that was being done was going to be lost. It would cost more, but finally DC, which, to be fair, has only been vastly supportive of B5 and the comic, and their intention is to make it as good as possible, decided to go with a better quality paper. The main question was whether there was or not there was enough of a reader base to warrant it. There was, and they did.
Well, he says that then, but
right.
Wasn't working with them anymore. He said that it was a very, you know, one of yet another one of his very frustrating, you know, projects that he did do because he really didn't have full control, and there were things that he didn't like of it. And more importantly, I wonder how much he could have liked issue number 5, given that Keffer is focused in it.
I was wondering that myself. We know he doesn't like Keffer, so.
So I have to wonder if that's even more of a thumb at them. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll give you a comic book. Here you go. Here's Keffer.
If only he could have killed him more than once.
Mm-hmm. And...
So is there? How much more do we have to say about this? I mean, as we said, there are some nice little tidbits here, and to go with another frequent contributor, you know, Edmonds, the PsyCor book was a very strong, tongue-in-cheek propaganda booklet. So I mean, it was that was fun for me for that one. At least that's the one that I may not have liked the writing the most, but that's the one I remember the most. So,
really?
Yeah, that's the, you know, when you say, you know, other after Valen's name, which I think is strong enough to have been an episode, honestly, if not two. You know, when I think of the comic run, that's the first one that always seems to pop into my head. That's the one that stuck with me the most. Their subliminal messages worked very well.
But they at the back of that PsyCor one, they have a nice little questionnaire: how to find out if you're a telepath. Excerpted from the official guide to the PsyCor. So it's a circle, you know. Have you ever heard someone talk yet their lips didn't move? Do you hear voices in your head when no one is around you is speaking? Do you finish other people's sentences for them? Is anyone in your family a telepath? Do you often feel different from your friends? Has anyone ever told you, you must have read my mind? If a friend starts to cry, do you feel strangely compelled to cry too? Can you read things you can't see by seeing them in someone else's mind? Have you ever considered joining the PsyCor? Have you ever said something, then noticed others were looking at you strangely? If you answered yes to one or more of these questions, you may be a telepath.
So, wait a minute. That means I'm either a telepath, an empath, a sci-fi geek, or a schizophrenic.
Or all of the above.
I vote schizophrenic.
No, I do like... that having a propaganda piece just makes it fun. The fact that you remember it the best literally does make the telepath propaganda, the subliminal messages, that's proof that it's working. And Edmund right now is sitting back gleefully.
he's got his fingers in an arch, and he's pushing his fingers together.
He's got his fingers templed, you know, pyramided up, going, yes, my plan is working.
Anyway, speaking of the art, I mean, at least those issues 5 through 8 and then 11, which I like the art on those, and that was John Ridgway was the artist who's done a whole bunch of stuff for 2000 AD in England, including some Judge Dredd, Doctor Who comics there. So I enjoyed the art on those 5 issues the most. Some of the other ones, I completely agree with Gary. About the quality of the art on some of those on the other issues.
Yeah, I just, and maybe that's what it is. I know a lot of the British comics are probably more in line with what we saw, which is, in my view, atypical for U.S. comics. But yeah, over on the other side of the pond, you do see that artwork a lot more frequently, especially back in the, you know, the early 90s, which was when this stuff was coming out. You know, as you look through, you know, the Judge Dredd stuff, like you said, 2008, when you see this artwork, yeah, it is reminiscent of British, and I wonder if that's where they might have grabbed the artist from, which is what you're saying they probably did.
Well, they did for those 5 issues. I don't know about the other ones, who those people are off the top of my head, though. I can see if there's anything about, hold on, wait a second, there's Rebecca... Yeah, so the David Gerald one, the penciler was Rebecca, then Guy, G-U-A-Y, and there's not that much about her on the Wikipedia. She's mostly known for her work commissioned by Magic the Gathering, White Wolf, and DC Vertigo Comics, World of Warcraft, Wizards of Coast, D&D. So, but it wasn't... She got her degree in illustration in 92, so this is just a few years after that, and it looks like most of her known work is later on.
I'd like to also point out to the listeners that, unlike many rare collectibles, the comic books never seem to reach that status. They're freely available on eBay, usually for the whole run. You can usually pick it up for about $30 to $40. If you're interested, I wouldn't call that a crazy price point for about a dozen books or 11 books. Mm-hmm. So you might want to look into it, of getting them if you'd like it. It's for a Babylon 5 collectible. It's a pretty cheap price nowadays, and you might find some enjoyment that we're not. And there, like as we said, there are some little gems in it. It's not without merit at all. So you might want to consider picking it up. It's not horrible, and if you're feasting after new Babylon 5 material and you haven't run across those yet, it might fill that need that you have.
Now, there also are those compilations. There's a graphic novel that gets all of the Invalon's name together. There's a graphic novel that combines issues 1 through 4. There's a graphic novel that includes issues 5 through 8 and 11.
They squeezed
right, which is the John Ridgway ones,
right? And then the only ones that weren't collected are the two David Gerald stories. I wonder.
Looking on eBay, there's ones. They're basically, $2, $3, $4 a piece there. Though somebody's said, issue number 2, hard to find series, $5, zero bids, but.
Well, I mean, I'm scrolling it at the time of us recording, and there's a few full sets. And when I say full, I mean it also has the Invalon's name. And you're looking between roughly, $40 to $50 would have it in your, have it in your mailbox. So,
right, yeah, there's a near full one for.
I would not call this a hard to come by series. Hard to come by series by any means. So.
Yeah, somebody who has issues 3, it looks like it's 3 through 11 for $30.
And I got news for you. You go to cons and these are in the 25-cent bins, guys. They're not,
wow.
They're not highly sought after or anything like that. It is a nice cheap collectible that'll get you a little bit more Babylon 5 story if you're interested in it.
Mm.
There is somebody there trying to sell, I think, the first issue, is a as a mint super mint copy for looks like about $30 or something like that.
Oh, that's insane. You can scroll down a page.
For just issue number 1.
Yeah, Jesse, he calls it I guess it's there's this CCG 9.8 rated, white pages, $30 is what he's asking for.
Unless that was a special oversized test print that DC did to keep in-house, I don't think so.
No.
So I don't have any of the graphic novels, by the way. Do we know if any of the artwork or colors were cleaned up for those printings or not?
I only have the individual books. I couldn't say, although I would highly doubt that they would put that kind of money into it. But I have to imagine 1 through 4 might come through a little bit better because it was mainly a paper flaw.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So they probably were on the improved paper in the compilation there for those four.
And that might even be why it was put together as that 4 set.
Interesting. I would actually like to see those and compare, just for my own curiosity, because they said, it looked like crap when they put it on the cheap comic book paper. I'm like, well, did it look better when you put it together for the graphic novel? Curious minds want to know. Do you want to know more? Every time I think about telepath propaganda, I think about Starship Trooper.
Would you like to know more? Yeah, I love that.
That just cracks me up. It does. It just cracks me up. Okay. Are we done? Have we covered what we can cover?
I mean, I don't want to repeat ourselves. I think we've done a pretty good job covering it. There, it's not a watershed of new information, but there's some nice gems. The artwork is a little rough to come by, and ultimately it was canceled before its halfway point, and JMS wasn't really that thrilled with it. So.
I do like that there's a couple of tidbits in there that tie into the series, but they don't affect the series too much. They you know, like for me, it asks a few more questions. You know, raises, well, what was really going on here? Was there maybe a little bit more backstory we could have gotten? But all in all, I don't know. I like that there's a little bit of teasers, but not too much, I guess, imperative backstory that's needed for the actual series.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a couple things which are just an added treat if you have the comics.
Yeah, so. like Jeffrey giving Delenn a kiss on the cheek.
I will admit, though, John Vickery is one person I still want to do an interview with.
Oh, seriously. Just to hear his voice.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yes.
Alrighty, then. We will, at this moment, take a very short break and come back with a wrap-up and an outline for our future plans.
Million tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. A world where empires rise and fall, where dreams are born and die, where war and hatred are challenged by love and faith. In the third age of mankind, an age plagued by an evil empire that seeks to destroy humanity, it is our last, best hope for peace, for victory, for freedom. It is Babylon 5.
Do I have to put an explicit tag on this show now?
My God, you guys are easy.
We know him so well, and yet we did not see that coming.
What the hell show is this?
It's the Babylon Podcast, only on Farpoint Media.
Yes, future plans meaning I'm giving people a heads up on the novels so that you have some sort of breakdown as to which novel will be coming up next and which novel you would like to, or what, basically the people who are contributing to helping us talk about the novels, you'll know when your homework's due. And I honestly I'm not entirely sure how this is going to go. Because I think everybody who says they want to join in already has the books, but there are some people who still want the books. Now, most of the first 9 are readily available. All of the Psycor books are readily available. And we know that 2 of the Centauri Prime books and 2 of the Technomages books can be considered readily available, although I've seen fewer and fewer of 2 of the Technomages books, not just the 1. And the novelizations for the movies, I'm not sure. I haven't decided if we're going to cover those or not.
There are a couple things, at least in some of them, with some, at least that Peter David wrote some extra material in there. So
yes,
but I'm not as a whole. They probably don't really add all that much.
Mm-hmm. And you know, for me, the one I want to really read is the one for River of Souls, which was written but never published. And I know the author. She lives down in Tucson.
Well, go jack her computer.
Does she have a final draft there?
I have asked her many times over the years if there's any way she could slide me a copy so I could just read it and just know it. And since she and other friends of hers train in Krav Maga, I didn't think it would be very good to bum rush her. Because even though I'm bigger than her, she knows killing strikes. You know, my strikes are, you know, I have the strength, but she's got the leverage. So it just would have been ugly. We would have both ended up in the hospital with broken bones over Babylon 5. Come on.
What better reason to be?
I mean, it would have been funny. I mean, that would have literally made a great, you know, anecdote for a blog, but nah.
Well, there was that one episode of ER where they were all dressed in the old security flak jackets with the, you know, the little cuts in them from coming from a science fiction convention.
Yes, so
I recognized them.
You recognized them, but nobody else did, right?
No. But I figured it was a bunch of diehard Babylon 5 fans standing up for the show is what I figured.
Okay, so here's the outline of the plan. Next week, we will talk about In Valen's Name. And then the week after that, we'll talk, I'm going to say Voices and Accusations. That's what I'm going to say for now. It depends on how much we talk about them, whether or not that actually gets split up into two separate shows or not. But I think there's enough tidbits that we could do two books per show. Maybe Shadow Within and Dream of the City of Sorrows could do like one whole episode for each. But
definitely those two you could do on their own. When the Shadow Within one episode and To Dream the City of Sorrows. The other ones, I don't know if there's enough material for doing two of them in one show, but.
Well, no, there is. I think there's enough to do two books in one show. I don't think there's enough to do one book per show.
Oh, no, no.
I was thinking ramp it up to like three to four.
Right. Three, that's what I was thinking as well for the other books. But
no, the trilogies are going to take some time, and I want to give people enough time to read them. And I think it'd be better to talk about the entire trilogy per episode. So it would be handy for people to have read the trilogy.
Do you really think you're going to get through this Centauri trilogy with Tim talking in one episode?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe we should do a double episodes on the trilogies and keep them together. Maybe. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Possible.
Keep the continuity, maybe. I don't know.
It's possible. Well, I'm saying, like, I don't know. How long do you think Tim could talk on the Centauri trilogy?
I think he could do an episode a book.
Wow.
Yeah, you probably could.
But if you... If you cut him off once in a while and take
give him a virtual elbow to the ribs.
I think you can get it down to two episodes.
Wow.
So is Edmund coming in for the Psycor trilogy?
Yes, he is. That's the Psycor trilogy between Edmund and Tim. That's the one I expect to go 3 hours.
Yeah, I can see that easily.
Okay. Obviously, I'm going to have to think about... No, I'm still going to plan for one show, Voices and Accusations. If we don't go long enough, then, you know, the next show will be three. But I also want to give time for the people who have read the books and who want to chime in on specific novels enough time to actually read them.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes. We will get this plan underway because... Seriously, the quicker we get through the novels, the more time we can spend on the trilogies, and the more time we can spend on the other books, like the security manual and the cooking, the dining on Babylon 5 book, and the guides.
I've made those recipes. Some of them are pretty good.
Okay, all right. Hold that thought.
Were going to do Permanent Dreams at some point.
Oh,
we
yes.
are, as soon as Tim sends it back to me.
So it's up to Tim.
It's up to Tim again. And, you know, another book that I thought of that we actually hadn't covered was that we might be able to cover is The Complete Book of Script Writing, JMS's book on writing for TV.
Which version?
What do you mean, which version?
I know that there's
two versions. I know that there's two versions. Did he change much between the second one?
I mean, there was a first edition, and then I think the second edition is the one where it has Coming Shadows added into it.
Yeah, it's a different.
Well, then there's a third edition then.
That has a different script in it?
No, it has the same script in it. That's what was like. I remember the first edition was prior to Babylon 5. The second edition is the yellow hardcover, which almost everybody has. It has the script for Coming of Shadows in it. There was a new edition of that second one. It's soft cover, and I think it's like blue. The cover is blue. And that's, I keep forgetting first, you know, I keep thinking that the first one with Coming of Shadows in it was the first edition. I keep forgetting that was actually a second edition. But that's the one I have. Now, I don't think that there was a difference between the second edition. Well, much difference between the second edition and the third edition. I could be wrong, though.
But since most people have that second edition, then that's the one to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then we've got, like, the A to Z guide, the season guides, the security manual. And then we can jump right on in to your other favorite topic, the collectible card games.
Sounds cool. And there was also the trading cards. Were you going to do that at some point?
Yes. I was going to do the trading cards. Should we save the collectible card games for last? I don't know. We have time to plan on that.
It can go in anywhere.
Yeah, it'll give me more of a chance to get more cards.
What would be funny is if somebody recorded an actual game. You just put it out. It's like, here's a Babylon 5 gameplay in action. That'd be kind of funny. And then Gary can tell us about some of the recipes he's made, because I have actually not been brave enough to try to make some of that stuff.
Oh, the spoo is delicious.
Really?
Yeah. I'll save it for the show, then.
Okay.
Excellent. Cool.
You need to make some and send it to us.
It won't hold up.
I don't like fresh spoo.
Spoo is it's but I'll save it. But it's an enjoyable book, and the recipes are good. So
that'll do it for this episode of the Babylon Podcast. As always, the website is babylonpodcast.com. Come by, visit, join in the conversations, add your own comments to some of the episodes we've done now and in the past. The email address, if you want to send your own email in, it's babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Look for us on Twitter. Look for us on Google+. Yes, we have a Google+ page. You can join us there. Put us in your circles. And I promise to put more goodies out. Really, I do. And as always, if you want to call in your voicemail message, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year we talked about the comics.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of, what do you call that? The inkers.
The printing press.
Pencilers.
Laser whip.
Tracers.